But first, chemotherapy could make cancer spread. That's according to new research from the US. This study claims the impact of drugs can increase the risk of cancer cells migrating to other parts of the body. However, what we want to talk about is how damaging these kind of headlines are to the average person who's currently undergoing treatment. On the line, John Crown, consultant oncologist at St. Vincent's Hospital. John, good morning.
Good morning to you, Pat.
Now, we've had a look at this story, and it seems to come with some provenance, the research from an American university. What do you make of it?
Well, I think this is really good and very interesting research. I think the headline is a bit irresponsible. The truth of the matter is where many, many biological and scientific phenomena about cancer cells are discovered in non-human experiments, either in dishes or in animals. This was mainly work that was done with mice. And great insights into the effect of drugs on cancer can be found. But patients, anybody listening, needs to be reassured. We have literally over 100,000 patients have been entered in clinical trials on a worldwide database where patients got various combinations of chemo, no chemo, chemo plus tablets versus not, etc. None of them suggest that chemo makes anything worse. They all show varying degrees of benefit from chemotherapy, sometimes very big and very worthwhile, sometimes small and not worthwhile. In addition, one of the key messages of this bit of research would seem to be that there's something bad about giving chemotherapy to breast cancer patients before they have their operation. We're increasingly doing that. There isn't a scrap of evidence in humans that it's dangerous to give it that way rather than surgery first, followed by chemo. And indeed, for some kinds of cancer, very prominently a kind called HER2, very, very interesting research done here led by my colleague, Professor Giuseppe Gullo, here in St. Vincent's, strongly suggests that there's a big advantage to giving the drugs before the operation. The same drugs will work better before rather than after.
Now, the layman's view of this research come from the United States would be that by giving the chemo drugs, that you do something, you switch on the immune system in some way that then allows these cancer cells to migrate to other parts of the body where, unlike in the breast, for example, where they may well be treated effectively, if the cancers migrate to a different part of the body, they would be inevitably be fatal. That's the layman's interpretation of the story.
Well, I mean, you see, that, and therein lies the problem, Pat, because the reason we give these drugs, or one of the reasons we give these drugs to people that have breast cancers before surgery, is we believe that there is a high chance that such spread has occurred already before they ever have a drop of a drug, that there has been spread of the cancer. And we know this because many people who have cancers which appear to be localized, where everything is negative, all the glands in the armpit are negative, all the scans, the x-rays, everything is negative, and everything appears to be going well. And sadly, 4, 5, 8 years later, they come back with secondary cancer, telling us there had been spread before the operation, and we just were not able to detect it. It's too small. And we know clearly from research that's now going back to the late 1940s that various kinds of drugs, and in the case of chemotherapy from the late 1950s, that chemotherapy drugs improve the survival of patients who have some kind of surgery for breast cancer, that if you give them chemotherapy, the chance that they will get that relapse gets quite a bit smaller. There are no data to suggest that chemotherapy promotes the spread of the cancer in humans or that it is dangerous.
So what are we to make of this, and particularly what are those who are currently undergoing cancer treatments to make of the headline, which I'm looking at the moment, which says chemotherapy could make cancer spread, says study.
Okay. I mean, I think this is something where, you know, cancer patients are going through enough. They're the imposition of the bad news of the diagnosis and possibly surgery and chemotherapy and its side effects. And we really, really completely underestimate the impact of all of this on the real lives of people, disproportionately women, of course, when it's breast cancer we're talking about. Talk to your doctor, talk to your oncologist, and ask, is she or he reassured about the current safety of chemotherapy? And we've a really excellent cohort of mainly very young breast medical oncologists in Ireland right now, mostly back from international training in the last couple of years, all red hot, all very good, and they'll be able to allay people's fears with the facts.
The problem, I suppose, for people like yourself, John, would be having so many studies, be they worthy or otherwise, reported in newspapers and online and on television and on radio, that the patient imagines in some way they might be better informed, and they ask you questions about this study or that study. Do you find an awful lot of your time is taken up trying to reassure people, or trying to, to borrow from Donald Trump, to say, listen, patient, that's fake news?
Well, I do want to make oncology great again, but the bottom line is that I love when patients are informed, when they're intellectually curious. I much prefer the patient who, you know, gives you a little challenge, who, you know, has facts at their fingertips. And of course, people who are not professionals, sometimes the sources they have will be of variable quality. So to me, it's never a time and position to explain things to patients. I find that one of the more interesting and more rewarding parts of the job.
So you do tend to get questions about those headlines in the newspapers, and we'll have to spend some time dealing with them. What about the other stuff? You know, and I know there are mad cures like going to Mexico to have coffee beans for breakfast, dinner and tea, that sort of stuff. Do you find that questions about diet, about, you know, things that are supposed to eliminate cancers or help speed up the curing process, are those stories helpful or otherwise?
Well, you know, again, I always, you know, like to, you know, meet, you know, statements with facts. And if somebody says, I have, there are a lot of people right now pushing vitamin C. There's a doctor someplace in Ireland that's giving big doses of vitamin C to cancer patients. And, you know, I say, you know, this has been studied. It's been studied incredibly carefully. It was studied a couple of times, in fact, in big, big trials, and it makes no difference. It doesn't work. And if you wish to do it, I mean, obviously, you know, you're a free person. You can do what you want.
It's not going to do you any harm. You just...
Well, I can't actually say that. I mean, there are some studies that suggest that high doses of vitamins can inactivate the effect of chemotherapy. So I usually tell people my strong preference is that you do not take any kind of strange, foreign, you know, unapproved medicine while you are on cancer treatments, treatments which can cause side effects and treatments which can have interactions. And if you're taking something that has not been tested, I mean, good Lord, Pat, you should see the amount of information that is in the product information sheet, or if the person's on a clinical research study on the consent form, outlining all the tests, studies, safety concerns of anti-cancer drugs. And the alternative medicines have just not been subjected to that level of scrutiny at all. Now, in many cases, I believe they're harmless. But certainly, I will always tell patients, you will not have me advocating you using them. But I understand that, you know, you have the right to make your own choices.
That vitamin C thing, you might remember years ago, there was a scientist called Linus Pauling.
Very well, won the Nobel Prize, not once, but twice.
Yeah, and he was allegedly discovered that vitamin C in massive doses would get rid of the common cold. I think years later, that was disproven completely.
Yeah, he said it would get rid of cancer too. And two clinical trials were done. I believe both were done in the Mayo Clinic at the time. And because Linus Pauling's stature and reputation for his colossal contributions to science were so great, through gritted teeth, the skeptical doctors did the study, which was negative. And then when Professor Pauling criticized the study, they did it a second time according to his own particular preferred methodology. And again, it was negative. So, I mean, this has been studied. Pat, you know, one thing, I'm getting older now. I've been really looking at cancer for 30-odd years, more than 30 years. And the one thing that is really just dawning on us in the last couple of years, we all made tremendously simplistic assumptions about this disease. This is a disease of mesmeric, breathtaking complexity. The thought that a simple vitamin, a simple berry, a simple dietary manipulation or deprivation will actually fix this problem, it just flies in the face of everything.
And yet there is the new thinking, and when I say new, probably what, in the last 10 years, that using your own immune system to fight cancers, which was thought originally not to be the way, because fast-growing cells were seen as being, you know, healthy because they were growing so fast, that the immune system couldn't be used, and it now is being used, isn't it?
Well, the immune system, the first kind of hypothesis that it might work was more than a century ago by a man called Paul Ehrlich, who you know, suggested that there might be the ability of the immune system to make magic bullets which would kill cancer cells and spare normal cells. And this was pie-in-the-sky fantasy. In fact, there have been immune therapies. The first actual immune treatment of a cancer was, again, more than 100 years ago. A surgeon in Sloan Kettering in New York called William Coley heated the blood of patients who had overwhelming infections and re-injected the products into patients with leukemia. And some of them had degrees of remission, which is now felt to have been some kind of an immune system stimulation. Mm-hmm. From the 50s and 60s onwards, there have been some immune treatments which worked, but it was always the same few cancers, and they generally didn't work very well. The colossal breakthrough, you see, what we always thought was that cancer, it's not like a bacterium, it's not like a germ, it's not like TB. Cancer is us. It's not some foreign invader. And our immune system, we always believed, was primarily programmed to detect foreign invaders. And the reason it failed in cancer was because it could not recognize the quote-unquote otherness of cancerness. But in fact, what's happened is that they discovered that there were some breaks on the natural immune system, which are there to provide checks and balances. Because we all know what happens if your immune system goes crazy. You get rheumatoid arthritis or ulcerative colitis or psoriasis or some awful diseases. But these breaks are exploited by cancer cells to protect themselves. And it was the really amazing work by a man called Jim Allister in America, who really should get the Nobel Prize, I hope, in the next few years for this, that these breaks could be turned off. And lo and behold, all kinds of cancers, in fact, are recognized by the body as being foreign. Because remember a few minutes ago we talked about the complexity?
Mm-hmm.
Part of that complexity is that they make unrecognized quasi-foreign proteins on the surface of the cell. So the body does actually recognize them as not being normal, and in many cases would knock them off. But the brakes are on. But he, Jim Allister, discovered how to take the brakes off. And lo and behold, the treatment of melanoma, kidney cancer, lung cancer, bladder cancer, Merkel cell cancer of the skin, a hatful of cancer that many of which we never would have guessed would be susceptible to immune treatment, are all undergoing quite dramatic responses. So very, very exciting times.
Yeah.
And the challenge is, how are we going to pay for it?
But we are entering, in those terms, a golden age in terms of targeting very specific cancers.
I think myself that we're entering a very interesting age, and I believe that what the big quantum at the moment was unexpected was the immune treatments. I don't think the immune treatments are going to convert any cancer from being always fatal to always cured, but I think they're going to convert many cancers from being poorly treatable to very treatable with some prospect of cure for some patients. And the other kinds of treatments, the magic bullet treatments, the molecular treatments, they are really coming on stream in a big way. There are many of them. And they're primarily, I believe, going to get cancers under control rather than cure them in most cases. But, you know, listen, we don't cure blood pressure, we don't cure diabetes, but people live for years with them, and I think that's going to happen with many cancers.
A final question from one of our listeners. He says, years ago it was told to me that some cancer cells will find somewhere to hide from the chemo, such as the brain.
Well, it's not that they're... That's a good question from your listener. It's not that they're clever and they hide, it's that the chemo isn't good sometimes for crossing into the brain. So if cells spread all around your body in some cases, the chemo can drift into them, can get into the cancer cells and kill them. But the brain has defense mechanisms to stop your brain, to stop us being poisoned, basically. There are things that the brain will not take from the blood into the brain to stop us getting, you know, toxicity to our brain. And many chemotherapy drugs fall prey to those defense mechanisms. So the brain can be a sanctuary site where some otherwise retreatable cancers can relapse. And that's there are some drugs that do cross that barrier, though, and we're looking at those as well.
Another one, this I will make the final one, John, because I know you're busy. Can you ask John why survival rates for stage 4 bowel cancer are so poor?
Because it's a real tough problem. And what has to be said is the survival rates for stage 4 bowel cancer have improved absolutely astronomically in the last decade and a half, from an average of about 6 to 8 months now, on average to between 2 and 3 years. And that was as a result mainly of 2 new chemotherapy drugs and 2 new antibody treatments, which worked. But Pat, guess what? There's a subset of those bowel cancer patients that do spectacularly with the immune therapy. Now, I hasten to add, it's a smallish number of them, but they have a particular pattern in their disease which makes them exquisitely sensitive to immune therapy, and that they often really respond dramatically.
All right, John Crown, consultant oncologist at St. Vincent's Hospital, thank you very much for allaying our fears this morning.